Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody out there in Radio Free Mafia Land. This is your host, Wayne Klingman, with probably the most important podcast I will do in my lifetime. Probably one of the most important podcasts that you can listen to because, well, I'll be blunt. We're talking about a man who will go down in history as probably one of the most evil people I could ever think of. Yes, we're talking about that man I can only refer to as a monster, Jeffrey Epstein. And today we have Jim Brazel. I apologize for pronouncing your name incorrectly, sir. The host of Hidden Truth Show, and we're going to talk about what we know versus what we don't know and what we do need to find out. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning or good afternoon. I was concerned that you were introducing me with that description of a monster, so I was very happy when it turned out you were talking about Jeffrey Epstein.
No, I would never refer to you as that. I apologize for a second if you would think that.
We don't want to confuse the audience.
No, we don't. As you know, I listen to your show, right? And you've done some really good, groundbreaking work on Mr. Epstein. But yet we keep on finding more. We saw that video today in the New York newspaper about some footage they shot there at his home. My understanding that the DA down in Florida has released all the records from his cases he had against him. What new information have we found out recently?
Well, we haven't seen much out of that yet. That was just released hours ago, as far as I could tell. I did look at the video, and we had heard descriptions of his Palm Beach house before and lots of lurid photographs and weird paintings and weird stuff. You remember there was the Bill Clinton in the Monica Lewinsky dress that was found, the painting that was found in his Manhattan apartment. So he was a weird guy, as putting it, it's an understatement, obviously. But anyway, that's the only thing I've really seen so far is a couple-minute video from the Palm Beach house, and there's lots of nude photos, and even something that wasn't clear to me if they were talking about a sculpture or a painting that apparently depicted what appeared to be a six-year-old girl. That would be very creepy, extra creepy, and kind of the first we've heard of him possibly being attracted to girls, you know, even younger than what we've already heard about.
Right. I mean, it's just fascinating that we don't know so much. I mean, we've heard rumors and the like, obviously. We've heard all kinds of crazy people talking crazy stuff because that's what people do. But yet alone, what we have found out is disturbing. I mean, I can't, and correct me when I'm wrong, right? We have him connected with Prince Andrew, and they really, I should say, the government of England and then the United States have connected Prince Andrew, with his activities, and they like to talk to him about them, but it seems that Prince Andrew doesn't want to talk to them. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, he gave he released a statement saying that he had no knowledge of Epstein doing anything improper with girls, and that he's happy to assist in any investigation. And so the FBI took him up on that, and apparently has been reaching out to him so that he can assist with the investigation. But they get stonewalled in response, so they decided to go public with that about a week ago to put pressure on him. Apparently it's something they don't normally do, but they just flat out made a statement to the press that Prince Andrew has been non-responsive in the request to assist in the investigation.
Absolutely. And for the sake of argument, we all believe that everybody is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, not in the court of public opinion. And we don't know what we don't know. We're asking questions about what's going on, so we can basically try to determine what can we know as members of the public, what we need to know. Because to me, to think that someone like Epstein got away with passively so much stuff for years, and nobody could pick up the phone or even make an anonymous tip to the police, is troubling.
Yeah, well, you know, it eventually, as we know, got to the police in Palm Beach County, but their handling of it was very, very questionable. So then it was taken over by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern Florida, and then their handling of it was very, very questionable. And then he ultimately pled guilty to one count of being with an underage girl, and served
was supposed to serve, I think, what was it, 2 years, and ends up serving about 15 months. But they also handled it very questionably because, as we've heard about, they let him out on work furlough 5 days a week, 8 hours a day or longer, to go to his office where we don't know what took place. But he was handled very, very lightly, very VIP-ish during the 15 months that he did serve. And then when he gets out, it appears he kind of went right back to what he'd been doing before.
Right, it does. And it does appear that way. And I think these are questions that we need to ask our elected officials who ultimately signed off in some of those agreements. Yeah, I mean, we have to hold them to account, because if they let bad people that have been convicted in a court of law go and get away with whatever, then we need to hold them to that account and say, hey, bud, you know, he's been convicted. What's going on with this? You need to do a better job.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's so many big unknowns that it's really hard to judge the case until you know all of them. You know, for instance, was he an agent of Mossad, Israel's CIA?
Right.
Was he an agent somehow for the U.S.? You know, you do have the quote by the Alex Acosta, the former U.S. attorney down there who was handling it and then became labor secretary. Supposedly, he reported that he did get a phone call from, like, the attorney general saying to go light on him, that, you know, essentially he's an agent. That I don't think anybody's heard Acosta say that firsthand. There was a report that he said that, I think it was like in his interviews, to be Secretary of Labor. They knew this issue was going to come up, and supposedly that's what he told the White House. He then went on the stand. You know, he had to be confirmed, of course, by the Senate, and I don't think that he repeated that to them. He certainly didn't say that when he resigned. If you remember his resignation press release or press conference, he was interviewed at that time, and he never said at that time that, oh, we went light on him because he was an agent. In fact, he made it sound as if they went tough on him, that it was Palm Beach County that was going to go light on him. We took over, and at least we got a guilty plea out of him and a sentence. But anyway, all that being the important point is, you know, you look at this whole thing through a different lens. If he was working for Israel or working for the U.S. even, then you look at it through a different lens, as opposed to him just being a pedophile, B, a creepy guy, C, somebody acting as essentially a pimp for these girls to high-end customers.
Exactly. And this whole thing with, if he's working for some intelligence agency, that brings us to the famous Inslaw case. Are you familiar with that, sir? With the backdoor computer program? Oh, Inslaw is the, I apologize. I've suffered from strokes. Sometimes my speech isn't that good. I have a problem with pronunciation. Forgive me in advance. Inslaw was the case where a computer programmer invented software for the U.S. government that was able to go in the back doors of computer systems for law enforcement and get information. This software was stolen by the developer, who sued the United States in court. It's a long and complicated process. In fact, are you familiar with something called Octopus?
No.
Octopus was a creature, a subject invented by Danny Kuthlaw, who was a writer. He would be later found dead, and apparent suicide in a bathtub from cutting his wrists. He was writing a book about this and how different agencies of the government, finance, whatever, fill in the blank, were all working together to basically control the world. And people like to know, and they, and other visuals, and believe that because he was looking into this, and this Inslaw computer program case is what got him killed. And as when you look into Octopus, which I hope that you do, sir, I'll send you some links on that subject, you find all kinds of interesting things of all kinds of very interesting people, from doing weapons experiments in the California desert to people being shot, witnesses disappearing, the whole nine yards. It gets really, really weird really fast. And if Mr. Epstein was indeed a member of some sort with Israeli intelligence, what better use would it be than to get honeypots involved, you know, with these rich and famous people to get them in a situation where, you know, either help us or we'll let your wife see these safes.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, with all the evidence that we have heard and heard about and seen, we've yet to see any evidence of him trying to blackmail someone. You know, that's obviously the implication here, that he was videotaping things and so on and using it for blackmail or for potential blackmail. But I've yet to hear in any of the stuff that was collected, for instance, that they found pictures, compromising pictures of Bill Clinton, or compromising pictures of Prince Albert, you know? So where are those things if that's what it was? Maybe we're going to learn about those eventually. But, you know, it's also possible that he was just providing these people in power with women just to make his own personal connections with them. You know, Ghislaine Maxwell was known for traveling and high society, and she kind of brought Epstein into that world a bit, and I'm sure he enjoyed that world also. So it could be as simple as that. It was his own predilections, and when he learned that one of these guys may also be interested, then he provided women for them, such as Prince Albert. But these are all things that we don't know yet.
And, you know, a
trial of Epstein would have brought out, you would think, but we're not going to have a trial of Epstein now.
No, we're not. And, yeah, and all we can do is hope that records come out that allow the investigators with the power to compel testimony to get more information, that they'll be able to either charge people or say, hey, this didn't really happen, or whatever it might be, because I myself would like to know what really truly happened, because there's a score of women, I believe, that would like to have answers and some type of justice. I think we owe it to him.
There's a new case out of the Virgin Islands. I don't know if you saw that, where the Attorney General of the U.S. Virgin Islands has brought a case against him alleging rape and underage women, et cetera, on his private island in the Virgin Islands. So interesting that they're finally doing something about it now. You know, it's alleged that he had a lot of influence in the U.S. Virgin Islands and was friends with the mayor, this and that. And so when everything was good in their relationship, they left him alone. Now that he's an easy target and everybody's going after him, all of a sudden now the U.S. Virgin Islands is going to bring a case against him. I don't know how they do that, considering that he's dead. I guess they're bringing it against his estate. But I don't know what kind of case that could be, because I don't think he can bring a criminal case against an estate. So it would be, I don't know if it's a civil case for damages. I just read about the case today because it was just brought in the last week by the Virgin Islands Attorney General.
Yeah, I think they got out of state for damages. But again, I'm not a lawyer. I only heard what I read in the newspaper. Yeah, it will be a long years and years people will be looking into this, I'm sure. It's interesting to know that people are looking into it. And let's hope that evidence comes out so we know. But Epstein, we know that, how can I put this without being too stupid? We know that rich people want to do weird things with other rich people. I mean, who wouldn't, right? And obviously, if Epstein can connect, if I'm Mr. Klingman and I have a thing for 14-year-old redheads, and he knows that, he knows if he makes that business connection with me, I might give him money to manage or do other type of business deals with him. That would make sense. But again, I get the sense, pardon me, only the sense that in time that would only be so easy to get more information on, because if a deal goes sour, how easy is it to pick up the phone and say, hey, bud, that deal we weren't going to do, we better do it again. I'm going to release these tapes. But you'd think we'd hear it. I know. I mean, something doesn't seem right. Something just doesn't strike me as being correct in all of this.
Well, and you got people very, very suspicious as to what happened in prison. I'm really not one of those. I tend to buy the fact that he killed himself, even though I know a lot of people want to believe it was something else. I just don't think that there's been any evidence that points to anything other than suicide. And, you know, how that would be quite a murder to pull off. Let's put it that way. He clearly would have been connected big time
if he was murdered, because it would have taken somebody like Mossad or the CIA to be able to pull off a murder like that in a federal prison where there's cameras and guards, albeit sleeping guards, and albeit some broken cameras, but not all the cameras were broken and not all the guards were sleeping. So, and there wasn't a shred of evidence in that room, you know, of fingerprints of other people or any hairs, anything in that other than of Epstein's.
You're correct there, sir. I can understand any number of reasons of why, if I'm looking to spend life in prison with very nice people, why I may not want to go and spend 40 years, you know, with a group of people who want to hurt me every day of my life. You know, they could possibly do so. I can see why you want to commit suicide.
Yeah, prison suicides are apparently quite common. And, you know, it appears that, you know, we all know that he went on suicide watch. But it appears that the reason he went off it so quickly is that he despised being on suicide watch. That being on suicide watch is not fun. They put you in a special cell that has nothing in it. You sleep with, like, you know, paper is your bed sheet. You know, I mean, it's just really horrendous conditions. And I think he worked with his lawyers to get off of suicide watch as soon as possible.
Sure. I mean, his lawyers, it's my understanding that he was occupying the visitor room there for hours at a time with his lawyers, and that would spend him, guy cost him thousands of dollars a day to do that. But his lawyers would make sure he was happy as they could possibly make some, because he could always get new lawyers. You know, that would be a pretty easy payday.
Yeah, that's what's the big question mark I had about the suicide to begin with was, like, wait a minute. He beat the charges in Florida, essentially, and he did it through hiring a dream team of lawyers, and he still got plenty of money. So it does seem a little odd that he wouldn't have felt confident that he could beat it again and therefore, you know, hold up better, you know. And I'm in a crappy prison, and yeah, things don't look, they look pretty bleak, but I know I can bring in top-notch lawyers that can help get me off, just like they got me off in Florida. So it's a little odd that he melted down and lost hope. You know, part of my thinking is that perhaps, you know, he had to have suffered from some type of mental illness. You know, he's a sociopath. Who knows all the mental conditions this guy suffers from. You know, was he taking medication? That's one thing I've never really heard, is whether he was taking any type of antidepressant type medication. I just wonder, might his dosage have gotten changed or not had access to the drugs once he was in prison? But, you know, he could have very easily, you know, let's say he was manic, he was bipolar, manic depressive, and he's going into a depressed phase while in prison. I mean, those people oftentimes are suicidal.
I suffer from manic depressivity myself. If I get deep, I can't imagine how I would feel when I'm going down that roller coaster to the bottom in a small cell, now with a lot of hope in the future. Yeah, I could see me wanting to take an easy way out. Absolutely. Now, if we could bring up his good friend, Elaine Maxwell, we know that she's tied in with her father, obviously. They were both pretty well tied in with the Mossad, were they not?
Well, we think that it's pretty much 100% confirmed that the father was, yeah. We interviewed, I'll try and grab his name while we're talking, the author of a big book on Maxwell, who says not only was he Mossad, but he was killed by Mossad on his yacht, which, you know, the official story is that he fell off the boat by accident. But this guy believes absolutely that he was killed by Mossad.
Right, yeah. That way he wouldn't be able to spill secrets, which would be the last thing that any intelligence agency would want to have done, is have their secrets spilled, especially those type of secrets. You know, I mean, we all know that intelligence agencies do nasty things, but some nasty things, you know, we really don't want to hear about.
Right. Yeah. They definitely would have the ability to go on that boat and make him disappear And I forget exactly what was going on at that time, but there had been some type of kind of falling out between him and Israel, or I forget what the story was, but basically, which led them to believe there's a risk that this guy is going to go the wrong way on us and, you know, release secrets. So we better take him out before he reveals too much.
Yeah, I think it was around the time that he lost most of his finances because of some shady business dealings he was involved in. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I would love to have the opportunity to say, hey, I know some things you might want to know about. If in exchange, you can let me go. Yeah, and I can see why.
Yep.
Beat the Messiah. But then, too, he's also working with the Russians. You know, I can see any number of people that would want him to be quiet. And I mean, he ran with some really nasty people.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so then you got the daughter, and you wonder, what was she involved with? And might she have brought Epstein into that world?
Yeah.
Epstein, I believe, had some interactions with Maxwell, but with Robert Maxwell. I think there is record that the two of them at least met. But, you know, we know Epstein was very close with Ghislaine. And speaking of that video we were talking about earlier, there is a portrait of her hanging on his wall in the Palm Beach mansion. So that'll give you an idea exactly how close he was with her.
It was my understanding they were at one time boyfriend-girlfriend.
Exactly, yeah. And that she wanted that to be more, and he didn't. But, I mean, it is kind of bizarre. You know, why would this woman who's got plenty of means, why would she get hooked up into assisting him with underage girls unless it was for some higher purpose? You know, I mean, is her self-esteem really that low that she's going to help her boyfriend score 15-year-old girls to have sex with? I mean, that's pretty bizarre unless it was part of a larger scheme.
Right. And because we all know that if one feels motivated by patriotism, for whatever cause you might have for it, right, that you're able to put that forward. I will do this horrific act because it will help my country. It will help my race. It will help my religion. Yeah, I can see why people do those things sad enough to say, but that's everybody.
Exactly.
Now, we don't know where she is at this time, do we?
No. I think they finally, the FBI has made clear that they're now looking for her. But she has disappeared, which is pretty astounding in this age of social media and facial recognition and DNA and, surveillance. It's pretty astounding that somebody could go missing like that, being sought after.
If we go back in time to discussion about that software that supposedly interacting with most law enforcement agencies around the world, at least in the Western world, and you have access to that information, I think you probably could go and what's the word I'm looking for? Why have yourself off the radar? Well, they don't know what country you're in, especially if you have access to false passports. I'm not, Elaine Maxwell. I'm Susan Smith.
Yeah. Well, they said Epstein had a fake passport that was found, right? A totally different name.
Yeah.
He claims that he had it because he was afraid of a Jewish persecution. But that was kind of the primary reason why he was denied any bail, no matter how many billions of dollars they offered in bail. The judge denied it because he's like, well, what are you talking about? You got private jets and you got a fake passport, You're staying in jail, my friend. And I think that was kind of the beginning of the unwinding for him. Supposedly, when he learned that he lost that and he was going to have to sit in jail through the entire process, that means to the end of the trial. So, that could have been a year right there where he knows at minimum he's stuck in that jail for a year, and that's best case scenario.
Right. And should be convicted, he goes, gets the appeal. Does he get to sit in that jail even more?
Yep, you know, he would, unless he qualified for bail at that point, which I don't think he would.
No, and going back to his connections with not nice people, right? How easy would it have been for him to escape someplace overseas without an extradition treaty, to live a life of ease? You know, are we going to send the Marines to get him to bring him back? I doubt it.
Yeah, well, that's some of the arrogance that resulted from him getting off easy on the first trial, because you would have thought, kind of like the way I often think about O.J. is like, geez, you would think that O.J., once he beat the charges, would have just disappeared and lived the life of a saint, thanking God every day that his ass is not in prison, right? But no, instead he's up to all kinds of hijinks in Las Vegas and gets himself back into trouble. And, you know, Epstein also, I would imagine, if he had really disappeared, primarily going to a different country, he probably would be okay today. But, you know, he went on living a pretty prominent lifestyle, you know, the most expensive flat in New York, supposedly, and hanging out with the likes of Bill Gates and Prince Andrew, et cetera. He didn't slow down.
No, he did slow down. When, again, he could have easily, if he so well put, he could have disappeared to Costa Rica, Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Thailand. Build a state.
No, he was trying to build a. It seemed like. Sorry, I was going to say it appears that he was trying to build a second act. That he started getting very involved with Silicon Valley, and was fancying himself kind of a tech entrepreneur / investor, and a lot of meetings. You know, I'm pretty sure he met with Elon Musk more than once, Bill Gates for sure more than once, and a few other key figures out there. But you know, when you got a lot of money and you're connected to the Democrats, so that connects you with a lot of people.
It does, and he's not, in my opinion, he chose who he wanted to be connected with. Well, you know, I mean. Why was he so well connected to the MIT Media Lab? Because those people out there doing some really breakthrough research when it comes to researching the metal psyche and how you manipulate people using psychology. Was he giving them millions of dollars to do research because he was just doing a nice thing? Or did he want something to help him manipulate someone else's consciousness?
Yeah, I mean, he was very interested in the sciences, clearly a super smart guy. And, you know, when you have a lot of money, anybody will take a meeting with you because, let's face it, these professors that are looking to have their projects funded, you know, you really think they're going to dig too deep as far as where this money came from or who this guy is. Bottom line, you got a guy wanting to fund a project. You're probably not going to scrutinize that very much.
No, the basics of that. And again, if he shows up well, nicely dressed, he takes you to a nice restaurant, you know, takes you to play where else you might want to be interested in doing. And I'm more of a cynic than most people, perhaps. And most scientists are very, in my opinion, are not very socially inept. And maybe for fun, he finds out, because he has the money to do so, that you have a thing for blondes, or you have a thing for redheads, right? So he uses you to suit thee. Yeah, you have the money, you wouldn't spend it. Why not put all the means to your disposal to get what you want? But again, he stayed here. That was his downfall.
But
again, going back to his past, over his lifetime, he's really connected to other shady people, right? I mean, we had a whole situation in Ohio, and forgive me, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name of that person he worked for years, who owned that one-time Victoria's Secret. Who am I thinking of? I can't.
Yeah, Les Wexner.
Yeah. You know, that's really weird too. I mean,
that's a guy who really hasn't come out and said a lot, but what he said has been kind of interesting. He claims to have had a falling out with Epstein because he says that he discovered that Epstein was taking money from him. He found discrepancies in the books. He confronted Epstein about it and kind of removed Epstein at that point, and I think that was just before Epstein's arrest, if I remember correctly.
But yeah, the two of them are very tight. We interviewed a longtime Columbus, Ohio reporter where Wexner lives and where Epstein bought a home. And it was his personal opinion that there was even a sexual relationship between the two of them, that this guy basically believes, even though Wexner is married to a woman, that Wexner is clearly gay, and that while he's not asserting that Epstein is necessarily gay, but, you know, for purposes of making a good connection, he was willing to give it a try.
Sure.
that was the rumor mill among the circles in Columbus about those two, because there's a lot of people asking questions about that relationship and who this guy Epstein was and so on. But Wexner, for whatever reason, highly, highly trusted Epstein to the point where first he had to manage all his money, and then he actually gave him power of attorney. So he was making lots of big decisions and handling lots of money for Wexner, even though he was very young at the time. I think he was, you know, mid-30s at the time, and with pretty limited experience.
Yeah, it gets weirder than that, because one of our Ohio's friend associates was killed in something that's been referred to as a mafia hit.
Yes. Yeah, remind me about that and what the connection was to Wexner.
Wexner is one of someone working for Wexner, and the guy was going to be involved in testifying about the money laundering.
Right.
And that's when he was killed. And within recent history, the last 2 years, the son of the Greek billionaire who runs a gaming company, at which I'm going to mispronounce, I'm so sorry for a stroke, I do apologize, Inhot's son was killed.
Intralot.
Yes, thank you, right? You heard about it, right?
Yeah.
He died from a heroin overdose. I mean, my daughter died of heroin overdose. It happens. We know this, right? So we're a big thing, right? But there's no history at all of this guy's son having any problems with any type of addiction issues. And why would you, if I'm in any city at all, and I'm worth $500 million, I'm going to have a bodyguard. But this guy's going to walk down the halls of a hotel alone and meet with somebody that's going to sell him hard drugs outside? How do you know this person? That's weird. That's weird, things happen. I
so
know.
So tell me,
but that's
tell me
weird.
About this story. You're saying the son of the founder of Intralot?
Yes. Yes. He
died
in Cleveland. He was in Cleveland.
When did he die?
A year or so ago, because the guy that sold him drugs was sentenced in January of this year. The story goes
he died of a heroin overdose.
A heroin mixed with fentanyl. Same thing that killed my daughter.
My gosh.
It's an easy... you don't have to put up that much before you die. We get this, right? But the thing that mystifies me is, again, I do not know that family relationship, I'm guessing here in parts. But the guy that I can find had no history, no newspaper articles about getting rehab. Maybe they covered up, don't know. But he's had no history of doing this sort of a thing. Okay, we get this. That could have happened anyway. But he goes to a city that he's never been to before to a conference about gaming, sports book, right? Sports book.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses, which they're involved in. He's at this hotel. He doesn't go to the big time meeting, dinner that they're going to have. Instead, he meets with a person who sells him fentanyl laced heroin, which happens a lot. So he doesn't have a guard with him, even a secretary with him, because after all, he's worth a lot of money. And why would you take the chances of doing that? I know myself, if I'm worth only a couple of $1 million, I wouldn't have a bodyguard, because I don't want to be in a city I don't know and get met by the wrong person and took it for a ride. I don't want that to happen. But this guy will.
By the way, the whole fentanyl angle in that, why is it that fentanyl makes its way into heroin occasionally?
It's an easy mix. It's an easy mix to cut it.
And fentanyl gives you some of the same feelings as heroin?
Yeah, you can't tell it. you can't tell the difference between fentanyl and heroin. It's easy to come by. It's easy to make. It's an easy way to cut heroin. The user doesn't know it. And what's a dead junkie?
And why does the user sometimes die from the fentanyl and not other times not die?
Fentanyl is a deadly poison.
What, too much fentanyl? Right.
Fentanyl
but
is a deadly poison.
People are taking it all the time. But in limited amounts, you don't die from it, apparently.
Right. From limited amounts, you won't die from it. It's like heroin. But it's easy to mess up the dosage.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in other words,
so you're
a
junkie?
If you shot up what you thought was heroin, but instead it was, let's just hypothesize, 100% fentanyl, you would die from that.
Probably, yeah. Probably.
So the amount of fentanyl that you can mix in it has to be something, what, more like 20%, 50%, something like that?
Very, very lower than 20%. I mean, I understand they found a trucker coming out across the Mexican border with, I think, 2-3 gallons of liquid fentanyl. And the newspaper article, I believe, said it was enough to kill everybody in the United States.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking the question, because I remember, I think it was a 60 Minutes piece that I saw about fentanyl and how lethal it is. That's why I was thinking, well, if it's that lethal, that it's so lethal that you can only cut heroin with about 20% fentanyl, then that doesn't sound like a very good thing to cut heroin with, because it's so it only reduces 20%. I would think you'd want to cut it with something that could take 50, 75%.
Right. But again, sadly, I can't speak to economics of the heroin trade. I only suspect that it allows not their honest heroin dealers, but would allow the more dishonest of the group to get by with more. And again, the people that they're dealing with are junkies.
Mm-hmm.
So the worst case scenario is you have to find more junkies.
Mm-hmm. So this was in Cleveland or in Columbus that his death took place?
I believe it's one of the two. Recently. Too.
No, it looks like Cleveland. I just brought up an article about it. Yeah, it's Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah,
my apologies.
Yeah, he was at a – check this out, Wayne. He was at a conference that I have personally attended many, many times. You know, I used
no.
to be in the gaming business. Yeah.
No, wow.
Yeah, the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States, they call it Nickel G's for short, the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States. And a lot of state legislators attend this. And, you know, it's where frankly, it's kind of a boondoggle for these state legislators to go to these conferences. You know, usually they're in
sure.
better places than Cleveland. They sit around and they talk about gaming policy for their state. Should they make sports betting legal? What should they do with their lottery and this and that? And so I used to attend it on behalf of my company, because you're always wanting to hear what the latest is going on and to meet and mix with the state legislators. I left the gaming business 3 years ago, but if I was still in it, I would have been at that conference. And it's a good chance my brother was actually at that conference. You told me this is the first time I've known this, but I'm very familiar with this company, Intralot. We did business with them, and I never met this guy or the owner. But so what is your theory as to what you think really happened here?
I see, this is interesting. Theory is pure speculation, right? When you look at the owner, once upon a time, not recently in fact, I was looking into the history of all pipelines in the Mediterranean, right? And at one time, as you probably well know because you're a very, very smart person, there was a plan to run oil and gas pipelines from Syria into the Mediterranean into southern Europe, right? And then something called the Greek Civil War, not Greek, the Syrian Civil War happened, which caused a problem, right? So the money dried up. So people were looking for money to do it. Oh, by the way, where can you find a lot of money that you really don't care about the source? Malta. Because Malta, as you know, being a gaming business since there, is a source of what, $1 billion plus in black, dark money? Probably more, right? And the Russians is as thick as thieves, with many, many nasty Russian people, with nasty Russian bankers and nasty Russian map connections. Easy way for them to get money. But again, this wheels within the wheels within the wheels. Again, maybe it's paranoia guesswork in my part. Probably it is, right? How hard would it be if the owner of the company upset the wrong people to send a message?
Yep. Well, pure speculation, but, you know, I think generally speaking, that company was not doing terribly well. At least back when I was following it. You know, first of all, it's in Greece, so you got all those problems. You know, it's got the Greek lottery contract and a bunch of other stuff in Greece, which I doubt is doing very well. But it's also an international company. But
has a DC connection too.
Yes, they have the lottery contract for. They run the lottery for DC. Every one of these states or the District of Columbia essentially outsources a lot of the work to lottery companies to do it. And IGT is a huge company in that. They're also referred to as GTEC. And then there's a company called Scientific Games that's really big in it. And then there's Intralot. And Intralot is kind of like the third biggest player in the U.S. as far as having big lottery contracts like that. So they probably have about 10 or 12 states that they run, and also D.C. And D.C. actually handed over even more. It's like there really is no they really run the lottery, as you point out, for DC. They're in a very strong position there. And there's been a lot of controversy and a lot of allegations of, you know, DC city government is not got the best reputation for being squeaky clean. A lot of corruption allegations in DC city government. So naturally, there's a lot of corruption allegations when they talk about, you know, the lottery and who's running the lottery and who they're connected with in order to have that position to even run that lottery. But they've been running it for about 20 years, Intralot. But that's a very small, as you can imagine, a very small lottery. That's nothing compared to California and New York and Florida lotteries. It's a very, very small lottery.
Wow. I'm a shack.
But, you know, I think they have – they're also big in Ohio, I think. Ohio, I think, is one of their states that they have.
Interesting.
Speaking of
Ohio. I know. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I know that it's my understanding from an article I read about Illinois lottery online, doesn't make it true, that Illinois couldn't run away from them fast enough. And we're talking Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
They didn't have the best reputation just as a company, you know, forget anything that might be, you know, questionable or nefarious or strange things going on in Greece or whatever. I'm just saying just interpersonal skills and so on. The people that they had weren't particularly well-liked in the industry. There was a lot of negative discussion. Some people loved them. Be clear that they had some really, really good people. It's a huge company, and, you know, they employ a lot of Americans in high-level positions. And but generally speaking, they didn't have as good a reputation as some of the other companies. So if Illinois ended up cutting ties with them, you know, that doesn't surprise me.
No,
but, you know, all the companies have those challenges.
Yeah, we're only speculating. A lot of things we don't know. I just found this whole thing interesting, very, very tragic, because when I discovered it, I assumed it was the case, like my daughter, someone that we tried to move heaven and earth to help, but she didn't want to help. You know, we have whole addiction issues, right, we could talk about. It could easily be with this poor man's son. I'm sure they love the child greatly. I'm sure they tried to move heaven and earth for him. But this left me all kinds of questions. I mean, I can't imagine a situation where I'm not worth that much money, where I'm not around somebody to protect me at all times.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, if there's no evidence at all of him having an addiction problem, that does seem odd. If he did have an addiction problem and he's got a bunch of money, I could certainly picture a scenario where he, you know, paid off his bodyguard to, you know, go to a strip club while he goes and has fun, you know?
Yeah.
So he, you know, maybe he did have security, but he gave the security the night off.
Sure. Sure. Because he did blow off.
Has there been? Yeah.
I see. He did. He was supposed to go to the fancy dinner, you know, and he decided not to go. So maybe he did give his security guards the night off.
Mm-hmm. Has there been much written, kind of speculating that it might have been something more nefarious?
The only I left it when I was going to try to find out the sentence they're going to give the guy that sold him the drugs, because they found out from his phone. Who he was talking to and stuff, so they're able to find and prosecute. The guy pled guilty to the crime. He was supposed to be sentenced in January. I mean, I found the time to look into what he got as a sentence. Did he get 6 months? Did he get 60 years? Don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. I did talk to a reporter friend who helped me find out more about my daughter's last few months of her life, and we had quite the conversation about that. And what he found out and some things he had questions of. But we're not able to go into that detail about this at this time on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, the fact that they caught the guy, or they have a guy who pled guilty, I'm reading about that right here, Terry Lee Christensen, 36, pleaded guilty to a drug distribution charge after selling the guy a blend of heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl outside a casino in 2018. Christian reportedly thought he was selling only cocaine. Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's a little different story if this guy's name is Socrates, I guess. Socrates Kokalis. If that guy thought he was only buying coke, that kind of makes a little bit more sense, because coke is more of a recreational drug than heroin, right? So buying heroin is usually a heroin addict. Somebody buying cocaine outside of a casino might just be looking for a fun night.
This is true, but again, we'll never know what the guy thought he was buying, right? You will only know what the guy who was convicted or pled to it said he was thinking he was saying. If only know, that's the deal, right? And I'm not going to be a conspiratorial person. I just find it very weird that the guy was able to find a coke dealer so easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what bodyguards are for. or cab drivers, you know.
I think I could go to a cab driver now. I could ask them all day or night in Racine, or go to Milwaukee, or go in Chicago, and I said, "Hey, bud, can you score me some heroin, or can you score me some cocaine?" And 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be asked to get the hell out of a cab. But there's one chance, but yeah. Or maybe
yeah.
Had a friend who
well,
said,
I would also say though that you know, this guy's probably pretty well traveled. All he needs is one kind of friend of a friend who lives in Cleveland that has a hookup. If the guy if he's looking to score, even if it was just cocaine on a business trip to Cleveland, that's somebody who has scored cocaine many times, and he kind of knows the type of people to ask to get it.
Yeah.
And then sprinkle into the mix that you've got, you know, it's a casino. And so when you got casinos, you typically got stuff like that going on. Here's a question. How did he ingest the drug? Did he snort it or did he inject it?
I thought, and away from my article, I read they had found a kit, which means to me a needle. But it might just be a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, because that would tell us whether or not he thought he was buying heroin or he thought he was buying cocaine.
Yeah.
Because,
frankly, I can talk to you all day or night of all alcohol. I don't know how the best ways are to inject cocaine or heroin. Sorry.
Well, heroin is typically a needle into a vein, and cocaine is usually snorting it up your nose. So if the drug dealer claims he thought he was selling cocaine, then presumably this guy thought he was buying cocaine and was buying it to snort it, not to shoot it. So it just makes it a really bizarre death, but that may make it less suspicious. Because I agree with you. It's more suspicious if this guy's buying heroin and there's no record of this guy doing heroin.
Yeah, and thing is, I expect the police report, which should be available as a public record, would have a listing of what they found in the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting to see, because I don't want to subscribe to or promote the idea that I think this guy was murdered to get back his dad. I'm not trying to say that at all. I'm saying it's an interesting situation. That possibly does happen, but unless we have absolute concrete proof of that, we're only speculating. And the last thing I'm going to do is speculate on someone's tragic death.
Right. So what do you know about Les Wexner then? What is your suspicions about him?
In my opinion, I think that the fashion industry, like the film industry, is a perfect way to skim money and a perfect way to wash money. In my opinion, I suspect he set up quite the interesting large money laundering operation. The drug operations out of New York, which explain the mafia hit, right? That all being said and done, I was going fat and happy with all that money being laundered through Victoria's Secret, and perhaps some hookers, high-end hookers, were being used as well. With the perhaps Elaine, perhaps Jeffrey as pimps, to make those connections to allow that money laundering to go on, because as we all know, the drug industry is huge. It's getting big. That part of the United States is in not only New York City, but Buffalo, Montreal, which is kind of about Buffalo, Montreal, Canada, and parts of Ohio are becoming more and more known as a source of international links to the cocaine trade.
So, sorry, you believe that Wexner was in the drug business?
I believe it's washing money. In my opinion, he was washing money.
Washing drug money?
Yeah, washing drug money, in my opinion.
But what leads you to believe that he was a drug dealer?
I think that he can wash drug money without being a drug dealer. I expect the arrangement would be, here we have this money, we want it back cleaned. It's probably how it would work out. But again, I'm speculating. I'm just simply speculating, but it's easy. It explains how much money the guy had, how much money Epstein got a hold of, how he's able to invest that money with other people, other industries, perhaps. Doesn't make it true by any means, but I suspect, in my opinion, that's exactly what's going on. It would not surprise me, and at least that gives you the planes.
But you must. This must be more than just pure speculation. What leads you to believe that Wexner may have been doing that?
Only because of what we found out about Epstein and using the models from Victoria's Secret. And perhaps some of them were used as high-class hookers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfect... And if I was going to wash money, that would be my perfect... If I was going to make a movie, that's my next best thing I would do, is get involved with the fashion trade.
And why is fashion such an easy way to launder money?
Because markups are easy to hide. It's hard to know what the legitimate cost of a product or service is. I can tell you whatever it might be, and you're going to pay that. And I have records now that you spent the money on. Right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with a film. Same thing with doing a film. And the records, the financial records, are pretty shady. It can be pretty shady to deal with. Have a lot of goods and services that you can say you bought, but there's no proof that you may have ever used them.
What about his connections with the DeBartolos?
The mafia family?
Well, you're saying it, not me, but the DeBartolos were built shopping malls, right? And Wexner would put his stores in their shopping malls.
If they're involved with the mafia, I'm not saying they are there. I simply don't know. It's a hard thing to do. I know the malls used to be popular before Amazon killed them. I mean, I wouldn't do touch a mall on 10-foot pole today.
Wait a minute. Wait, sorry, say that again?
Sure. Malls used to be a thing, right? But once we became more and more involved in online buying, shopping malls, at least this area, are dead. I mean, our mall is a skeleton. So it would be, to me, a poor business venture would be a shopping mall. A better business venture, if you were, would be film. Again, this is where I'll start, but why not? I would be film, would be maybe fashion, or casinos. I would, a sports book would be an easy way to license for money.
Well, DeBartolo's did get into this casino business.
Which casino
but
they
I'm
own?
Talking about DeBartolo's back in the 70s and 80s when they were building
shopping malls. Shopping malls were big. I remember, I'm sure you, know, you might not be old enough to remember shopping malls when that became a craze, right?
Yeah. So I just thought that you would have some knowledge about DeBartolo's links.
No, I don't. I don't. I do not know much about that family. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. And then, of course, they went on to own the 49ers, of course.
Of course. Well, of course. Did the taxpayers pay them, build them a stadium?
In San Francisco or Santa Clara?
Yeah, San Francisco, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I know the Raiders got the nice taxpayer subsidized stadium, right?
Yeah. Not in L.A., though. L.A. is not tax subsidized. I don't know. They may have been given some type of breaks on permits.
They got over $1 billion in Vegas.
$1 billion
in Vegas. And that's a story. That's a whole other story about how sports teams owned by billionaires are making more money than God from the taxpayers. But that's another story for another day. But it'd be fascinating to talk about. Well, sir, I do thank you for all your time today. I appreciate you going off subject with me in so many different entertaining ways. I'll send you the link to Danny and the Insulaw situation so you can look at it at your convenience. But again, I do thank you for being on the show and helping me.
Thank you, Wayne. Always fun.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. And again, this show is for entertainment, enjoyment only, and we're only giving our opinions for the screwed up things they might be. Please do your own research and read the newspaper, pay attention to what's on the media, and check your sources. Thank you, one and all, for this being on my show with me. I apologize for my poor stroke voice today, and with that, we hope everybody has a great day. Goodbye.